I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. One of the heated topics being debated in the halls of the State House and spilling out into conversation elsewhere in Vermont is over whether or not the state should take action on reducing the penalties for people who possess a specific opioid without a prescription. The drug in question is buprenorphine, sometimes known by the brand name Suboxone. It is an opioid, but it's used by doctors to help treat opioid use disorder. It has proven efficient and effective for many patients, and it's more widely available in treatment centers in Vermont and doctors' offices than it used to be. But it's also used by people suffering from opioid addiction who don't have a prescription for it. Some are trying not to use stronger and more dangerous opioids like heroin or OxyContin. Some are actively trying to treat their own addiction, but aren't in a treatment program. But it's not legal to use or distribute buprenorphine without a prescription. A bill in the legislature aims to decriminalize it. And as I said, this is causing some heated debate. Joining us now is Representative Selena Colburn, a Burlington progressive and lead sponsor of H-162. That's the bill that would decriminalize the possession of unprescribed buprenorphine. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Also here in the Montpelier Bureau with us is Representative William Knott, a Rutland City Democrat opposed to the legislation. It's nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Representative Colburn, can I ask you first why you brought this legislation, why you think it's necessary?
Absolutely. So this is my second term in the legislature, and one of the key issues that I've been working on as a member of the Judiciary Committee and just really is part of what motivated me to run to serve in the legislature is looking at how we treat substance use disorder and particularly opioid use disorder and how we can go about decriminalizing substance use disorder and really treating that issue like the public health issue that it is.
And in this particular case, the reason that you think we need to decriminalize buprenorphine, even though it's available by prescription legally for people who are in treatment for opioid use disorder, is what?
So I do represent part of Burlington, and I have been in long conversation with my police chief there, with my Chittenden County state's attorney, with my mayor, and with the community stat effort of the Chittenden County Opioid Alliance. And this is actually something that they kind of functionally piloted in Chittenden County. So they made an agreement with law enforcement and prosecutors that they were not going to arrest or prosecute for just possession of buprenorphine, so not sales, dispensing, just possession. And I thought that was really good policy. It's been in place for I think about 9 months now. The sky hasn't fallen. In fact, Burlington has seen and Chittenden County have seen some reductions in opioid deaths from the previous year, and certainly not some of the increases that we've seen in other parts of the state. And so I thought it made sense. I also looked at the clinical research on who's using non-prescribed buprenorphine and why, and the vast majority of users report using that substance to self-medicate, to avoid withdrawals, to avoid more dangerous, deadly substances. And we know that the majority of overdose fatalities in the state last year involved fentanyl. So I thought that made sense from a public health perspective. There's also research that shows that people who have used non-prescribed buprenorphine actually have better outcomes in treatment than people who go straight into medically supervised treatment, which I think is fascinating and really important research to consider in all of this. It's just there are many, many studies that bear out what people are telling us in the field anecdotally locally, which is that this is a really, really important pathway to treatment for many people and also a harm reduction approach in the middle of what is essentially a fentanyl, deadly fentanyl crisis.
Representative Knott, I want to get to you here on why this is not a bill that you support. But just before we do, just so we know exactly what the bill does, can you just outline the steps that the bill takes? What would actually become law if this passes as it's written now?
Absolutely. So the bill, as introduced, decriminalizes only misdemeanor possession amounts of buprenorphine. So it essentially carves buprenorphine just out of the narcotic, depressant, illegal possession statute only at those amounts. We did amend the bill in the Judiciary Committee to also create a diversion and civil process just for people who are 18 and under who possess the substance. So it would mirror actually what we do for alcohol and marijuana. And that's really what the bill does. It's pretty simple. So it doesn't actually change felony possession amounts. It doesn't change sales and dispensing laws at all.
So if I have a prescription for buprenorphine and my friend says, I really need some, I could still be arrested for giving it to a friend under this legislation.
Yes, you could.
But the friend would not be arrested for having a small amount of buprenorphine without a prescription.
That's exactly right.
So, Representative Knott, why is this not a bill that you support? What are your concerns?
So I also sit on the Judiciary Committee, and I'll say that when it was first introduced, I was not dead set against it. I just had my doubts and wanted to do more research. I'm from Rutland City. I represent a portion of Rutland City. And Rutland City has certainly struggled with opioid addiction. It's a crisis, and we have reacted in many ways. One of the things we've done about a decade ago is we started Project Vision, which partnered our police department with treatment counselors, with groups that help fight addiction in order to move forward. So I reached back to people in Rutland City. I asked how this would affect what we've been doing and the progress we've made on the ground. And the reaction I got was real concern. The Rutland City Police Department, who I said is partnered with various groups, does not very often arrest for possession. It was adamantly opposed to this. I heard it best from anyone, you know, proceed with extreme caution. The members of the Rutland City Board of Aldermen, the members of the Rutland City Police Commission unanimously were opposed to this and issued a letter stating so.
And why are they opposed? What's their concern?
And the concern is this. So we have a treatment facility in Rutland that has done wonders. We have Project Vision. We have various groups in order to help people. And the concern is that it is a controlled process. It is a process that is understandable, that can do legitimate help for people. And to take BUP and just flood the streets with it, the worry is that it will set things back. And
so the concern is that buprenorphine is effective in a treatment program and that you don't want to see it used without a treatment program based on this. Because flood the streets is also a you know, sort of inflammatory term that, you know, is there also a concern that there will be an influx of buprenorphine?
When we were in the Judiciary Committee, one of the persons we heard testimony from was the police chief of Burlington. He said he wanted to see the streets flooded with BUP. He used that term. That's where I picked it up. But so there's two things. First off, yes, there's the worry that self-treatment, it can be potentially dangerous guesswork, that treatment with BUP works with counseling. There's a system, and we have space. We can accommodate the people who need this. But also, I've been told by the Rutland City Police Department that it is being used recreationally in Rutland, that this is a drug that people are using not just to self-treat but to get high. That they're using it for recreational purposes. And the concern is if it becomes much more available on the streets, if it gains a bit of a sheen of respectability by being decriminalized, not only will more people be using it recreationally, but the concern is that people who were not already using it recreationally might be tempted to try that had not been tempted otherwise.
Scott Pavek, who's an activist on this issue and also has had personal experience with it and has been public about that, writes in to say, each time buprenorphine use displaces heroin or fentanyl use, a person's safety from opioid overdose increases significantly. Research has shown that this is true even if a person takes buprenorphine without a prescription. Research has also shown that the vast majority of people using buprenorphine without a prescription do so to treat opioid use disorder. Opioid overdose fatalities have increased in Vermont year after year after year. Where we've decriminalized buprenorphine, Chittenden County, we've only witnessed success. There are thousands of ways to develop substance use disorder and far fewer options for treatment and recovery. In light of Vermont's continued crisis, why should we allow possession of non-prescribed buprenorphine to be a crime? DB says people are resistant to change and programmed by DARE, reefer madness, and pop culture that some folks aren't worth saving, that they're less human. That kind of thinking informs their dismissal of something like this that is so obviously a good thing that will save lives. Chittenden County State's Attorney Sarah George tweets in to say, for anyone opposed to the bill, I would ask them to show any research, science, evidence, or data that proves criminalizing it has worked. Show me how criminalizing it has saved lives, got more people into treatment, deterred diversion of it, and made their community safer. Representative Knott, can you offer any of that sort of contradictory evidence to what Sarah George is asking for?
Well, certainly. And as I had mentioned briefly, the Rutland City Police Department does not very often charge possession in these cases. I think the number is seven charges over the last decade. So it's not a crime that is prosecuted very often. But what it can do and what it has been used for is if someone has this potential charge hanging over their heads, then they're much more likely to go to drug court, to go into treatment. So in Rutland County, in Rutland City area at least, it's been used as a means to maybe give someone that last push they needed to initiate their treatment.
Representative Colburn, I mean, there is a lot more treatment than there used to be in Vermont. And you heard a testimony from the health commissioner, Dr. Levine, saying, you know, in some places there really isn't access to drug treatment or to buprenorphine. But in Vermont, there is. And so there's not as much of a reason to have decriminalization to either tacitly support or allow it to be used sort of without a prescription on the street. Why do you think it's still worth doing, even though Vermont does have more treatment facilities and has a sort of a funnel for people to get into treatment if they want it?
So Vermont does have more treatment facilities than a lot of other states. I think that's a pretty low bar to measure ourselves against. The health department itself has reported to us in the legislature numerous times that, well, about 8,000 people in Vermont have access to treatment. They estimate as many as 20,000 or more are actively struggling with opioid use disorder without receiving treatment. So that is the administration and the health department's estimate, not mine.
Although they're not saying that all those people want treatment.
Correct. And so we have some studies that have been done locally. Rick Rossin, who's a researcher at the University of Vermont, studied our hub and spoke system. And one of the questions he asked participants in his study who weren't seeking treatment but were struggling with opioid use disorder is, why not? Why not go and get treatment? They cited things like transportation around the state to get to our hub sites, things like not wanting the stigma of being associated with the hub site. They talked about things like not wanting to disrupt their employment, not having childcare, and not having access to spoke providers in their neighborhood. We know that although we've tried to get more and more treatment in primary settings, we've had a bunch of studies around the state that have showed us that prescribers often max out at like 8 patients, so nowhere near what they'd be waivered to actually prescribe to. And so there are plenty of impediments to treatment. And then, yes, some people are just not ready. I actually sat in on Dr. Levine's testimony in the Human Services Committee, and immediately after him, someone who had used non-prescribed buprenorphine as a pathway to treatment talked about his own experience. And he said that for him, it took actually many years to be able to seek treatment in a medically supervised setting because of the underlying trauma that was driving his addiction. He had to be ready to confront it in the ways that would be expected of him in our sort of supervised treatment setting. And he wasn't ready to do that, but he wanted to stay alive until that was the case.
More comments from listeners. Lisa says, decriminalized bup will save lives and chip away at the stigma those seeking help face every day. Every step we can take to save lives from overdoses needs to be taken. You should never be punished for taking medicine that is severely decreasing your risk of an overdose. Ciro says, yesterday, my family and I celebrated 8 years of recovery from opiate use disorder. Prior to this clean time, I had been on the buprenorphine program in Vermont. I'm now a graduate student at the Vermont College of Fine Arts on a merit scholarship for my advocacy work. I would like our representatives to come to the table with solution-based communication. Anyone can critique public policy. What Chittenden County did is not radical. It's based on evidence, facts, and economics. This isn't rocket science. This is comparable to putting pressure over a wound that is bleeding. In this case, they are stopping people from dying from accidental overdose. Let's go to Jonah, who's calling in from Wells River. Hi, Jonah. What's your perspective?
Well, I'm against the decriminalization of it. I've been around it years ago, and I've seen it abused. I've seen it bought and sold. And just as with marijuana, it was recently legalized, and I'm not judgmental about any of this at all, especially marijuana. But when you decriminalize or, you know, legalize something, it becomes more normal and accepted, and I think more people use it. I remember I worked in construction, and I was around a lot of people that were, you know, prescribed this drug, and I remember they had these strips. They called it bute, and I guess short for buprenorphine, but they had the pill form, which they would crush and snort. But then I guess people got smart and said, well, people are abusing this. We need to make it less able to be abused, and they made strips. But I guess we're supposed to dissolve on the tongue or under the tongue. But what I saw was people dissolving that and shooting it, you know. And I think it's naive to expect that our good intentions are always going to result, in the way that we think.
Jonah, thanks for sharing your experience with this. I appreciate hearing from you. Let's get another thought in here from John, who's calling in from Springfield. John, where do you stand?
First of all, I'd like to say hi to William Knott. He's helped me out with a couple of things I've done, Punk in the Park. But I would, I've seen it abused a lot. I'm a recovering addict from 15 years ago. They weren't giving butes then, and I did it cold turkey. But first time I tried it, it was just someone gave it to me to dissolve on my tongue, like the other caller said, just to get high, and they were all using it to get high. And people are still buying it and just using it as a supplement when they can't find what they want.
John, thanks for sharing your thoughts here as well, seeing an interesting balance between the comments that have been emailed and tweeted in versus those people who are calling in. Let's get another call in here before the break from Mike in Essex Junction. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to commend the Rutland representative for taking the legislation back to his home district and talking to the people that the legislation would affect, and for what from all appearances, be affected and base his decision on feedback from the people on the ground that were going to be affected by this legislation. I find it refreshing because God knows that was not done. Nobody listened to the fact that there was not one police chief in the entire state of Vermont that supported legalization of marijuana, and they passed it anyway.
So, Mike, I hear what you're saying, and appreciate that, and appreciate your shout-out to Representative William Knott. And we'll point out that in this case, it's interesting because both of the representatives here have said in their community, the community that they represent, this is what their community wants. This is what the leaders and the police leaders in their communities want. And so we see different perspectives even within the law enforcement community between the Rutland City Police and the Burlington Police having very different perspectives. Police Chief in Burlington, Brandon Del Pozo, told VPR that his department stopped arresting people for misdemeanor possession of buprenorphine about 9 months ago. And he said, quote, that we're aware of, there's been absolutely no collateral consequences of a negative kind so far. Meanwhile, Public Safety Commission Commissioner Thomas Anderson is opposed to this bill. So a lot of different perspectives as we look at how people feel about the idea of decriminalizing buprenorphine. You know, one of the things that we talk about is what local police departments have said that they want. As we've heard in Rutland City, this is not something that's supported by the police department. In Burlington, it's not only supported by the police department, it's actually been put into practice effectively already. And we heard from Chittenden County State's Attorney Sarah George Wing, and that she supports this as well. So we're looking at both law enforcement and once we get into the judicial side of things. So if this is already happening at various levels throughout the state, that different police departments and different counties are treating this issue differently, does that suggest to you, Representative Colburn, that a statewide approach is needed to balance things out, or couldn't each county do it however they want?
One of the things that we talk about a lot in the Judiciary Committee in the 3 years that I've been there is the concept of geographic justice. So, you know, Representative Knott mentioned that in some settings, a charge like this might be a pathway to diversion or to treatment court. I actually think a low-level possession charge would be unlikely to get a referral to a treatment court, but possibly diversion. But what we've seen as we've asked for data year after year in the Judiciary Committee is that different prosecutors make those decisions very differently around the state. So, you know, someone in Rutland County or Chittenden County might get diversion or and have those charges ultimately wiped off their record. Someone in another county in the state might be faced with a permanent misdemeanor drug conviction that follows them for the rest of their life and affects their ability to access public housing and all kinds of other resources. So it's about leveling the playing field. We also heard testimony from Sarah George has in the Chittenden County State's Attorney's Office made a decision to use prosecutorial discretion not to bring these charges. We heard from other state's attorneys that said that they would like to do that but did not want to rely on prosecutorial discretion. Felt like as long as the law was on the books at the state level, they were going to be in a position of having to uphold it whether they wanted to or not.
And Representative Knott, I mean, what about that idea that, sure, different places can do different things, but that's not necessarily equitable to all people across the state of Vermont?
Right, and certainly a wide range of charging options on a settled idea is not ideal. And as the legislature, we do have the right to set standards statewide. But in this issue, in this instance, what Chittenden County, what Burlington has been doing with this program, they've been following this for about 9 months. And 9 months is not a long period of time. There are no – I agree that this is a medical issue, that addiction is a medical problem. There are no medical trials that wrap up after 9 months and their findings become universally adopted. We have real concerns on the ground about this in Rutland City. I know we're not the only community that has those concerns.
How would it be different for Rutland City if right now the police department already doesn't charge for misdemeanor possession of buprenorphine? What would be different if it were decriminalized statewide?
Well, so like I said before, it really takes an arrow out of the quiver because they might not charge. Sometimes they charge. It could very well be, I don't believe, someone who this is their first offense, this is their only possession is going to be charged. But sometimes if someone is a bad actor, if someone has a significant criminal record, might be charged for possession because you're trying to build a significant case against someone who is a proven bad actor in his community. So there are times where it might be beneficial to the community at large to be able to put an additional charge onto someone. And on the other, and as I said before, there's also the instance of someone who isn't that way, who addiction is their only problem and is a medical issue, and this could push them in the direction of seeking treatment to avoid this charge. I think that is a tool that has worked in Rutland, and it shouldn't be, with unproven data, taken off the table for us. If this works out in Chittenden County and we have a few years' worth of data, this could be discussed. But given that I still see it as an experiment in progress, less than a year since its inception, I just don't feel it's right to impose this on communities throughout the state when there are objections being raised.
Let's bring in some other voices again here. Ellen says, I think we should get treatment into the hands of anyone who needs it without punishing them for trying to get help in whatever way it works. Dave writes, Chittenden County cut overdose deaths in half last year, while the rest of the state saw a 27% increase. We should urgently try to duplicate Chittenden's success everywhere instead of foot-dragging and hand-wringing. And Sean says, I am a practicing licensed clinical social worker and licensed alcohol and drug counselor, and also a person in long-term recovery. I am extremely concerned about plans to decriminalize. Make no mistake, buprenorphine is a highly addictive drug that can be abused and used to replace other opiates that may not be able to be obtained in the moment of need. Having an unrestricted supply without any medical supervision or support is misguided and dangerous. The likelihood of a lucrative black market larger than today is just not probable but expected. And Amy is calling in from Woodbury. Amy, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I have personal experience. My sister was a heroin addict for over a decade, and she has been on Suboxone now for nearly 3 years, and I believe that it is because of this drug that she is still alive. We need to see addicts as people with a mental illness. They don't do drugs because it's fun. They're self-medicating because there's some pain inside. And when we criminalize something that is a mental illness, we separate families, we charge people absurd costs, and it's already not affordable to have health care in this country. So how do we expect these people to receive recovery and support when we are treating them like criminals? I just think it's absurd.
Amy, thank you. I appreciate hearing your perspective there. Attorney General T.J. Donovan is on the line. Attorney General, nice to have you with us.
Jane, thanks for taking my call. And I just want to thank Representative Colburn and Representative Knott for debating this issue in such a civil and eloquent way. I support this bill. My office testified in support of this bill in the House Judiciary. And the reason why is We've made a lot of progress on the opiate crisis in our state because we've addressed it as a public health issue, period. And part of public health is looking at harm reduction strategies. And it is exactly like the last caller just said. When you have somebody, look, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be a heroin addict today. But this is a devastating addiction. And if somebody has a choice to buy a bup on the street or heroin on the street, I hope they go to medicate themselves to try to combat the withdrawals of that devastating disease. This is a step in the right direction to address a public health crisis. Yes, there are public safety implications, but it's a public health crisis that should be guided by harm reduction strategies. This is one of them. I also agree with the issue of the geographic injustice by having certain counties decriminalizing this and other counties prosecuting this. This reminds me of the debate over decriminalization of marijuana. And my view of why marijuana was decriminalized by the legislature was because of the disparate treatment of individuals based on where they lived. We shouldn't have a system of justice that you get prosecuted in one county for trying to access medication versus not being prosecuted in another county. We need to level the playing field. We need to treat addiction as a disease, and we need to develop and implement harm reduction strategies. Do people abuse us? Of course they do. But the studies overwhelmingly show that the great majority of people use non-prescribed bup to manage withdrawal symptoms.
Attorney General, I'm going to stop you there and toss this again to Representative Knott. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you for calling in and listening to the show. And Representative, I'm going to give you another comment as well from Tom Dalton, Executive Director of Vermonters for Criminal Justice Reform, who has a specific question for you and says, since you reject the H-162 policy championed by law enforcement in Chittenden County, where overdose deaths dropped 50% last year, please explain your better plan to reduce overdose deaths in Rutland County, where overdose deaths climbed sharply by 50% last year. So you've talked about this before, that you don't think a nine months is enough time to really make something be a statewide plan. That's how long it's been not prosecuted and not charged in Chittenden County. But when you do look at what's happening in Rutland County, what do you think would offer harm reduction strategies that would prevent opioid deaths, that would prevent overdose deaths?
Well, first off, I'll just say that, you know, I think in addition to the decriminalization, in addition to not prosecuting for it. When we look at where deaths have increased, where they have decreased, and certainly the goal is a decrease across the board, we also have to look at Narcan. Where was Narcan distributed? Where was the percentage of Narcan?
This is the opioid reversal drug.
The opioid reversal drug that can stop overdoses. I think until that is factored into the equation, we don't have a apples-to-apples statewide comparison of what's working and what isn't. And I think that's something that needs to be discussed as well.
Is Narcan not readily available in Rutland County?
It is readily available, but I believe the distribution is higher in Chittenden County. I believe Chittenden County has pushed for the distribution of Narcan and, quite frankly, put more money into it than Rutland County has.
And do you think Rutland County should put more effort and money into distributing Narcan to anybody who wants it for free?
Again, if the studies show that that works, that's something that should be talked about. We are also, however, finding instances in Rutland, at least, of where people are shooting up to the point of overdose and having a compatriot administer Narcan to them so they can get a more intense high and then come back. So Narcan is problematic as well. I certainly want it out there. I want every possible means to save lives out there. But when we look at what's really working, when we look at what's shifting numbers around, that's got to be part of the discussion as well. And as far as what Rutland City is doing, it took so long to get our treatment center up and running. It took so long to get the partnerships with treatment providers and the police department in place. It took so long to have Rutland Regional Medical Center and Rutland Mental Health up to speed. It's a work in progress, but we do community outreach. We continue to improve upon our community outreach, and I believe we're moving in the right direction, and I'm worried that taking a step that brings the process back to square one in a lot of ways will have long-term consequences that are negative. I don't think that just
why
because...
Why does this bring it back to square one? I mean, are you suggesting that you think people who could get buprenorphine without a prescription would do so instead of going into treatment, instead of using the treatment facility?
I think that when buprenorphine is harder to acquire, then people are going to be more apt to seek treatment. There are more and gain the counseling and other benefits that come with it. I think the higher availability of this would certainly make it easier for some people who are ready for treatment to postpone it. And for me, I look at what the legislature's done this year. There are valid studies that show that e-cigarettes can be used by adult smokers to quit, to beat their addiction. But the legislature has added a huge tax to e-cigarettes. We're in the process of making it impossible to buy them online. There's a real push to raise the legal age to buy tobacco products from 18 to 21. And it's because we are trying to avoid creating new addicts. And I think there's a bit of a disconnect to do all these things to keep nicotine out of people's hands to avoid addiction, but to get more opioids into people's hands in order to fight addiction. The process does not seem to be running on parallel tracks.
Representative Colburn?
I don't see this as a bill to get more opioids into people's hands. Like we said, the penalties around diversion, around sales, around dispensing are unchanged in this bill. I see this as a bill that says that removes stigma as one barrier to self-protection and hopefully ultimately a pathway to treatment. I think this is a bill that tells people, like, if you have a choice today between bup and heroin or fentanyl, which I think at this point we can just call heroin fentanyl, that we want you to choose bup. I mean, that's part of it. It certainly is like there's the self-treatment part, but even for people who are using this substance recreationally as opposed to heroin or fentanyl, that is, as Attorney General Donovan said, that's a harm reduction strategy. This is about keeping people alive and also about not punishing people for their struggles.
Let's turn now to Jackie Corbally, opiate policy manager with the Burlington Police Department, who's calling in. Hi, Jackie. Nice to talk with you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I want to preface and say I've been doing this work for 30 years. I used to be the clinical director for the state of Vermont. I understand what black market buprenorphine looked like before the hub and spoke system. We are in a public health crisis that we have never, ever seen in our lifetimes. We are living every year a Vietnam War as far as casualties around our country. I am incredibly dismayed that we are even having to have a discussion around S-162. For me, this is a no-brainer. I work with people every single day who are struggling with addiction, and very, very few of them are using buprenorphine to get high. They're basically using buprenorphine to get to a place where they can engage in treatment. They're using buprenorphine to keep themselves from dying, and to equate buprenorphine to fentanyl is an absolute injustice. This bill will save lives, and I would challenge anybody to come to the police department and talk to a family member who's lost an individual to an opioid overdose and say that we need to continue to have a conversation whether this is the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. In my mind, as somebody who's worked for 30 years and lost numbers of people, this is a no-brainer. We should be embracing this bill and talking about how we're going to further strategies in our state. As Attorney General Donovan made reference, this is a public health crisis. And it saddens me that we're even having to have these conversations about what's the right thing to do. I feel like this is something that we need to address, and we need to talk about lives. We are losing people at a rate that we've never seen before. And in Chittenden County, we've been able to cut that loss of life by 50%. We're not where we want to be. But when the rest of the state is going up in overdose fatalities, I think it behooves us to talk about how do we pass this bill, but then how do we put resources in those communities so that the treatment conversation is not the conversation. Accessibility. I have not heard anybody say to me in the time that I've been doing this work that they don't want treatment. People are at different places of stages of change. And if this can save a life versus putting fentanyl in your body, then I just don't understand why we're having this conversation. To me,
Jackie, I'm going to stop you there. I appreciate it. Jackie Corbley is opiate policy manager with the Burlington Police Department and called in. Jackie, thank you. Representative Colburn, before we end today, where does this stand? I mean, there's a lot of talk about it, and clearly a lot of people are very invested in it. But what is the chance that it's actually going to make it through the whole process this year?
That's a great question. The bill was referred to the Human Services Committee in the House to dig more into the public health issues. I think they have been doing that very thoughtfully, but it's not clear to me whether this is a bill that will be voted out of that committee and come back to the House floor this year or not. I hope that's the case, and I think there's real desire and intention for that to be the case, but it's an issue that people want to be thoughtful about, and I understand that.
And always good to remind people and remember that it is a 2-year session, so things that don't go through by the end of this year don't have to be completely restarted in a new session. We can pick them up again next year should it not make it all the way through this year. Representative Selena Colburn is a Burlington progressive, and Representative William Knott is a Rutland City Democrat. Thank you both very much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.